It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sometimes it takes a minute for the magic to work. Hi. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. It is the third day of August, 2022. Summer is rapidly running away from us, but, well, it has a little bit of summering left to do, no doubt about that. It is a balmy 85 degrees in the studio this evening. The air conditioner is going for all it's worth, but it just can't quite keep up with the heat outside. I'll figure out a way to nonetheless muddle through. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. And, goodness me, we'll find some kind of prayer meeting, something or another, during the course of the program. But there's other ground to cover, and it is, well, you know, in a way, it's prayer meeting kind of stuff. It's just it's not relative to the, you know, monotheistic, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky stuff. This is more of a Prayer Meeting Wednesday for the Goddess of Irony. Now, you'll figure out what I mean. I have no doubt of that. I need not get ahead of myself because there is so much to do. In the meantime, however, if you would like to augment your listening experience when you're listening live, like you are if you hear me right now, head on over to headon.live and click on chat room, and that'll if you'll go, trying to get into the chat room myself and doesn't seem to. There we go, took a minute. Yeah, if you pop in right this very instant, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Theo and Squeaky, and capably moderated by, well, not capably moderated by yours truly. I'm sure and I hope that Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan will be popping by shortly, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Oh, God, those little pissants seem to have found their way into the studio. And, well, it gives me something to do in the interim. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and, of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so consequently, we say thank you to our third day of the month subscribers. And that means we say thank you to Bill in Allentown. Thank you. And thank you to Stephen. Thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you, John. Thank you, Brother Mick. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Karen, so very much. Thank you, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. If you would like to help out, well, the fundraising goal is at $600. $597. Thank you to Emilio for keeping us from having a goose egg yesterday. But we are at $597. Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge remains on the table, and hopefully we'll remedy some of that. It'd be great to, if we can meet Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, that means we will actually be caught up. If we can raise $300, then Chris in Germany and Ralphs and our anonymous friend will double the $300 that comes in. The PayPal button's at headon.live. You know all this stuff. If you'd like to become a new Patreon subscriber, a new PayPal subscriber, that would be wonderful. Hopefully that will happen. I had no idea. Brother Deacon Asa tells me it's 2 whole years since our dearly beloved Herb has left us. Yeah, Herb Kane. 999. Because he had to prove his fealty to his God Emperor in a shithole city, in a shithole state. He went to the maggot rally smack dab in the middle of the plague in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Stan. For a minute there, it took me a second to realize who he was talking about, Brother Deacon A. So Herb Tarlick? Oh, no, Herb Kane. Yeah, Herb. Remember, that's what Godzilla from Wasilla referred to, Herb. Yeah. But if I think it's hot in the studio, it's not nearly as bad as it was in the Fellowship Hall kitchen earlier today, as the little old blue-haired ladies and the little old blue-haired men and the little old blue-haired non-binaries got busy making a Fellowship Hall prayer meeting Wednesday supper. Yeah, knowing it was as hot as it was, they tried not to heat the place up too much, but golly, sometimes it can't be helped. And the little old blue-haired men went out and fired up the Cathedral of Common Sense smokers and beer can roasted some chickens, and with all that beautiful flavor, the little old blue-haired ladies then went about the business of making chicken salad. Oh, it was so, they make such wonderful chicken salad. You know, you can, what they do, it's just a cute little trick. Chicken salad's got mayonnaise in it, so what they do is they add ranch dressing mix and make it a kind of a ranchy chicken salad. And there was a sourdough toast and lettuce and cheese, whatever people wanted to dress their chicken salad sandwiches with. And alongside that, there was some coleslaw and sweet iced tea. Oh, mercy, it was all just fabulous. And for dessert, well, they plugged up the ice cream maker and we had homemade vanilla ice cream, and the deacons always loved that. And so after they got nice and full, the deacons trundled their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs out of the basement, and went out to the parking lot where they commenced smoking with the sinners. Mm-hmm. It only took a modest waving of the horn the horn solar powered cattle prod. And they got to moving. Oh, well, okay. That's just you, Brother Deacon Asa. No raunchy chicken salad in this house of worship, you heathen. You canoodlians just don't know what's good. Yeah. With that, they came through the, they came blowing past me, trundling, of course. Grabbed a shot of hand sanitizer. I don't mean for their hands. The deacons tend to drink it when there's nothing else around. And blew on past that desiccating bowl of butter mints. Down the center aisle. They're waiting now, brethren and sisters. They're waiting now. They got the heavy brass-bound burgundy velvet-lined plates, and they're getting ready to pass it about, and hopefully we'll knock some of this down. This fundraising hole, and meet the challenge that's out there, and double your money, your love offering. And in the meantime, well, we'll call the Minister of Music forward to lead us in the offertory hymn. Sibling Minister of Music, if you would please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Oh, brethren and sistren, I'm calling on you to get up off your seats and onto your feet and wiggle and waggle and waddle and scrooch and scrunch and squeech and come on out from betwixt the pews. Watch where it is so that you don't spread any extra pew. And come on down that blood-red aisle and fall, sinners, upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands, how glory, upon the subwoofer. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Ginormous Guru, Aggravated Abbess, Naughty Nun, Maximum Mother Superior, Robin Kincaid, and this is This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I need to, I thanked Karen, our dear friend Karen, during the course of the thank yous for the beginning of the program, but I should note that Karen reduced the Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Karen reduced that by, well, reduced it to $257 now to go, $257. So if we can raise that, there will be a whole bunch of bill paying going on, and I would, we would all take it. We thank you. We thank you, Karen, and we would take it as a great kindness if we could get the first of the month bills managed. It would mean a very, very great deal indeed. But what I said earlier about this prayer meeting Wednesday being dedicated to a different deity, I'm talking, of course, about the goddess of irony, because you know when she hits, but sometimes she really reaches back and puts some stank on it, and she did that in the last day or so, the goddess did. And Alex Jones. Things just got things were bad for Alex going into the Sandy Hook trial, and they're just getting worse. And golly, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Oh, mercy sakes alive! This is a beautiful thing. The George Peppard character on the A-Team used to say, "I love it when a plan comes together." Apparently, Nitwit Nero is not the only the only maggot who can hire really terrible lawyers. This is a beautiful thing. The trial was underway. Alex Jones was on the stand when he found out something that, oh golly, didn't really want to know. And his lawyers screwed up, well, massively. It was a beautiful moment. Let's go to the audio. This is hallelujah, Sister Tamara. Hallelujah indeed. Praise. Our buddy John in Central PA sent this along, saying, among other things, "I love the goddess of irony, and for good reason." Where'd it go? Well, not okay. I'll find it in another place. Sorry, I had it. There was, of course, Stephen New York notes Alex Jones. To paraphrase Scott, he's all screwed, Robin. Yeah, he is. And in a beautiful way, there's been discovery in the Sandy Hook parents' lawsuit against that purveyor of paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage. And in the course of testifying, he found out that his lawyers, in responding to discovery requests, had just given the Sandy Hook lawyers his entire text history, not just selected bits and pieces. And so they let him sit there on the stand and just lie and lie and lie, lie like a rug. And then they swung the trap. It was a sweet, sweet moment. The clip's a couple of minutes long and worth every second of it.
I'd like to refer you to the end of 2014. We've had a video received in evidence of you stating your belief at that time that no one died at Sandy Hook, that the whole thing was fake. Do you understand, as you sit here today, how crazy that is?
I have said before that there have been so many lies and so many things in the past, and I was under a lot of pressure. And I truly, when I said those statements, when I say something, I mean it, that I really could believe that it was totally staged at that point. And I was basing that off of really Steve Pachinik, who is has been a very prestigious person.
Do you understand now that it was absolutely irresponsible of you to do that?
It was, especially since I've met the parents, and it's 100% real, as I said on the radio yesterday, and as I said here yesterday.
It really was, especially since I met the parents, and even more so since I met their lawyers, because they're breaking my ass. As Darlene in Connecticut points out, and I'm proud of the Sandy Hook fams. They're not taking any shit and they're going after all those that deserve it, from Remington to Alex Jones. Alex Jones. And he needs to keep that duct tape over his flap trap. And if it's removed, I hope someone yanks it off his ugly mug as hard as possible. Show no mercy. Amen. Amen, Sister Darlene. Amen.
100% real. And the media still ran with lies that I was saying it wasn't real on air yesterday. It's incredible. They won't let me take it back. They just want to keep me in the position of being the Sandy Hook man. My son got confronted yesterday.
Objection, speculation as to what the media wants. Mr. Jones is just a test. Being on a show.
Sustained. I'm going to just remind you, just answer the question that
yes,
your
ma'am.
Attorney asked you. Thank you.
In 2014, based solely off your recollection and without having looked at any documents, can you tell us about how much time was devoted by InfoWars to covering Sandy Hook?
Yeah, see, this is the beautiful thing. With every question, with every word that comes out of Alex Jones's mouth, the Sandy Hook lawyers, the family's lawyers, know that he's lying. And they know he knows he's lying, because they have, not to put too fine a point on it, they have an entire download of his entire texting history. They've got all the texts, including texts that they had asked for and which, under penalty, subpoena, he had said, do not exist. And they knew at that point in time that it did, that they did. This is so delicious. Oh.
I believe it's 5-6 hours.
In the whole year?
Yes.
That quiet leaves Alex Jones sort of looking around, wondering. He's kind of got that, he's got the look in his beady little eyes of a rat that's in an enclosure with a, you know, boa constrictor. And the rat knows there's nowhere else for him to go, and that he is on, and that the, and the, he, the rat, is on entirely at the mercy of the whim of the said boa constrictor. And so he looks around, and his beady little rat eyes shift about, and then, for lack of anything better to do, he reaches for his paper cup of water.
Moving into 2015. At the end, or at the middle of 2015, in July 2015, you stopped, InfoWars stopped covering Sandy Hook.
Yes.
Why did you stop?
Because Halbig was saying that I was involved in Sandy Hook because I wouldn't have him on, and I started finding out that some of the things that the anomalies they had put forward weren't true, and I had just ended my divorce and just kind of got my head cleaned up and stopped drinking for a while and realized that it probably did happen, and I was probably, you know, I mean, it was a good chance I was wrong, so I started basically trying to walk it back long before.
Yeah, he realized he was going to go broke. So let's see. He's what's he blamed it on so far? He's blamed it on he found it believable to begin with because so many lies have been told. And then I guess he found it believable because so many lies have been told because he was drunker than Adam's off ox. And we haven't gotten around to blaming the paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage yet, but that's probably out there somewhere. All these questions, and the whole time, the Sandy Hook family lawyers know that he is lying and lying and lying and lying. And as Stephen New York just said, I just choked on my schadenfreude.
Before I got sued, because I wasn't sure that I was right anymore. Not everything's a false flag. Not everything is staged.
During that time, there was a reporter working, or there's a gentleman who at least we've had in evidence worked at some point for InfoWars named Dan Badandi. Are you familiar with that name?
Yes.
Can you tell us who he is?
He was a part-time reporter. He was a really nice guy, but we were being more comedy-based part of the show then. And so Rob's like, this guy's like a Howard Stern character. And so we hired him to do some funny stuff, but he wanted to do serious stuff. And then he was officially working for us, then I let him go. When he moved to Austin for about 6 months, and just it didn't work out. And then he went back, and he was doing his own show, but sometimes he would go out and, you know, say he was doing stuff with InfoWars, and we were proud of some of it, not so proud of other parts of it. And he,
Can you tell us specifically what you're not proud of regarding Badandi?
I mean, I didn't like, once I saw, because I wasn't at the time watching a lot of the shows, obviously I was doing my own show. I saw some of the reports he put out, both on his platform and on ours, and I remember saying, you know, that's not how we want to handle things. If he's going to do that, tell him don't do that. And then I began telling the crew, no more Sandy Hook. Don't cover it.
Oops. There probably wasn't, you know, 15 words of the truth in that entire 4 minutes and 4.5 minutes. I'm sorry, almost 5 minutes. As Emilio says, the meth made me do it. It's the meth, I swear. That and the strawberries. Red communist strawberries. Exactly. So he's trying to what? He's trying to do damage control, and it ain't working. And the whole blame it on the media thing, that's 100% real, as I said yesterday. And the media still ran with lies that I was saying it wasn't real on air yesterday. It's incredible. They won't let me take it back. They just want me to keep in the position of being the Sandy Hook man. My son got confronted yesterday. Oh, really? I hate that for your son, Alex. But the fact of the matter is, grieving parents, wherever they have gone, have had Alex Jones acolytes. They torture and torment them. And so now, well, now that the cat's out of the bag, the January 6th committee has gotten involved, because apparently in those text messages is a bunch of stuff about the January 6th terrorist attack on the United States, which is what it would be called if anybody but white people had perpetrated it. It was this morning when Alex learned that his lawyers aren't the greatest.
Mr. Watson says this is a video of a medical student training to intubate. Makes us look ridiculous, suggesting this means COVID is fake. Sandy Hook all over again. I read that correctly?
Yes.
Here's the next message.
Now, at this point, Alex is looking at a computer monitor. He's being shown what the lawyers are showing the jury. And by now, he has a tissue in his hand, and he's wiping his face off like a Pentecostal minister in the midst of a full-on fit. And he's begun to coughing and doing all kinds of tells that let the world know that, uh-oh. And he's coughing, maybe to let the jury know that maybe he's got a touch of the Rona.
What'd you tell Mr. Watson?
I get it.
Mr. Jones, it's true that this article is right now live on Infowars.com. I can pull it up, right?
I've never seen this text message. I guess you guys got Paul's. My phone didn't save them. So that's fine with me.
Your phone didn't save the second.
I told you guys I gave it to the lawyers and said they drained the phone, they'd find that stuff. I don't have my phone.
You gave it to the lawyers. They were supposed to find it. So that's what testimony is?
No, I searched it as well. I mean, so you guys have all this stuff and you say we didn't give anything. It's
Mr.
ridiculous.
Jones, you know how an iPhone works, right? You've had iPhone text messaging for several years now.
Yeah.
What does it mean if the messages are in blue? Whose messages are those? Whose phone is this taken from?
I don't know whose phone's taken from. I mean, I turned the phone over and said, take the stuff off.
Can I have you look in the very bottom below the very bottom left corner? Is that your phone number?
Yes. So you did get my text messages. And it said you didn't. Nice trick.
Yes, Mr. Jones. Indeed. You didn't give this text message to me. You don't know where this came from. Do you know where I got this?
No.
Mr. Jones, did you know that 12 days ago, your attorneys messed up and sent me an entire digital copy of your entire cell phone with every text message you've sent for the past 2 years, and when informed did not take any steps to identify it as privileged or protect it in any way. And as of 2 days ago, it fell free and clear into my possession. And that is how I know you lied to me when you said you didn't have text messages about Sandy Hook. Did you know that?
I told you the truth. This is your Perry Mason moment. I gave them my phone, and then...
Mr. Jones, you need to answer the question.
No, did you know this happened?
No, I didn't know this happened. But, I mean, I told you. I gave him the phone over.
And just answered the question.
You said in your deposition, you searched your phone. You said you pulled down the text, did the search function for Sandy Hook. That's what you said, Mr. Jones, correct?
And I had several different phones with this number, but I did, yeah. Well, of course, I mean, that's why you got it.
No, Mr. Jones, that's not why I have it.
My lawyer sent it to you, but I'm hiding it. Okay.
Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jones, that's...
just answer questions. There's no question. Mr. Bankston also only asked questions.
Sure. Mr. Jones, in discovery, you were asked, do you have Sandy Hook text messages on your phone? And you said no, correct? You said that under oath, Mr. Jones, didn't you?
I mean, if I was mistaken, I was mistaken, but you got the messages right there.
You know what perjury is, right? I just want to make sure you know before we go any further. You know what it is.
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm not a tech guy. I told you I gave, in my testimony, the phone to the lawyers before or whatever, and so you got my phone, but we didn't give it to you.
No, Mr. Jones, one more time. And please remember, if you need to assert the Fifth Amendment, you can. I need to know that you can do that. But you testified under oath previously that you personally searched your phone for the phrase Sandy Hook, and there were no messages. You said that under oath.
Yes.
And you lied when you said it.
No, I did not lie.
Oh, yes, him did. Him lied a lot. And I love it. Your lawyer's messed up, and the camera pulls back to show Alex Jones's lawyer. Who at that point in time was really hoping, I think, that he could maybe, well, I don't know, crawl under the table and slither on out of the courtroom. And Alex lies really well on air when no one can confront him. It's the same way with all the right-wing broadcasters. As long as there's no one there who can confront them, and as long as they're in control of which microphone is hot and which is not, they can lie with impunity. But in this situation, what I found interesting watching this clip the first time, the second time, the third time, and the fourth time, is, I was sort of extrapolating, if you will, and what I was extrapolating was the notion that I felt like I was watching what it would be like if Nitwit Nero sat down to be examined under oath in regard to January the 6th. Nail him dead to rights and he'll still sit there and squirm. As Steve in New York points out, yes, Alex, your son was confronted, but at least your son is walking around all alive and stuff. Yeah, Emilio pointing out, yeah, I'm telling you, some hobo put that phone in my pocket right before putting my fingerprints all over it. I've never seen that phone before. I don't know why it has my photo as the wallpaper. Right? You've had your Perry Mason moment. I mean, he couldn't even muster up a half-decent righteous indignation. Oh, my God, says Darlene in Connecticut. His attorney's fucked up. They probs can't stand him either. Man, talk about Freudian. And the judge has already had to act like his how many ex-wives and talk to him like the child that he is? It's not going to get any better. If his lawyers were worth a fuck, they would be begging the Sandy Hook family lawyers for a settlement. No, just write down the number, guys. Really, that's all. Just write down a number. We're good. And the lawyer for the Sandy Hook families, by the way, is a dandy. His name is Mark Bankston. an entire digital copy of your entire cell phone with every text message you've sent for the past 2 years. And like I said, that has more relevance than one might think. No, we know. This information was barely out for more than a couple of hours before the January 6th committee fired up their subpoena machine and started issuing a subpoena to the Sandy Hook family lawyers to get the information. Rolling Stone had the report and said that a source familiar with the matter told them that the House committee is working on a request for the data from the plaintiff's attorneys because there is January 6th material in there. Jones's lawyers, I would hazard a guess, are probably shitting as many bricks as Alex Jones is. Because at no point in time did they assert that any of those messages were protected or privileged in any way, shape, form, or fashion. To quote, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice. This looks like a level of legal malpractice that is breathtaking to behold. As of 2 days ago, it fell free and clear into my possession. That is how I know you lied to me. Oh, Alex, Alex, Alex. What tangled webs we weave when first we practice to deceive. Steve in New York, taking a little bit of issue, says, Alex's lawyers, I'm not sure they did screw up. Without knowing what the actual demand said, I don't know for sure. If the demand was broad, I don't know the choice they'd have had. But it wasn't... That's the thing. It was not a request for the entire contents of Alex Jones's phone. They were seeking text messages. The lawyers just gave him a mirror of the entire system. So it looks like, yeah, they fucked up. And I hope the plaintiff's lawyers will not put up any fight on this. I can't imagine that they would. I love the fact that Ralph's asking, so can Alex Jones sue his lawyers for malpractice? He might very well. I don't know, maybe a bar complaint along the way. So when the surprise came out, over at NBC News, the reporter, Ben Collins, was having as much fun as anybody else was with it, and said that there had never been a twist this dramatic, or as good as Alex Jones's lawyers screwing up and sending the Sandy Hook parents' lawyers the entire contents of his phone and his long-hidden financials, ever. And I guess David Slack, who's a former writer for Law & Order, saw Ben Collins' tweet and responded, this is great, and said, we wouldn't have let a lawyer do something that dumb on the show because it wouldn't have passed the smell test. It wouldn't have been credible. It would have defied believability. Wait a minute. Somehow it seems like, yeah. Dum dum. Oh, goodness me. The goddess of irony. Oh, she is. She is a good goddess. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of conspiracy theories, I guess since he's busy with the trial, he can't be on the air. And, yes, exactly. Rather than Alex Jones pleading that a bowl of chili before his testimony had caused him to have amnesia, as Brother Deacon Asa points out. So it was the lawyers this time who had the amnesia-inducing bowl of chili. That's some hellacious chili is what that is. Hoo-wee! Precisely. And cowbell for amnesia-inducing bowl of chili, Brother Deacon. That was restaurant quality. But like I said, he's not on air. Alex isn't, so somebody else is working his corner relative to the, you know, yesterday's program. We talked about the assassination of Ayman al-Zawahiri. And naturally, the hard-hitting journalists over at Real America's Voice got on the blower to get somebody with some real intelligence about the Zawahiri matter. You know what I mean. Yeah, that's right. Marginal trailer queen.
So what do you do with the fact that as people are starting to look forward to 2024, I think there's consensus, mostly among our audience anyway, and with most of the people that I've spoken with here, that Donald Trump needs to be the nominee, and anybody else is sort of a distraction at this point. At least that's what I'm hearing from people. But that I hear the words MTG mentioned a lot.
Hello.
As somebody who'd be a great running mate for Donald Trump, I just wonder what you do with that.
Well, I think if he asked me, I would definitely give that some strong consideration. Yeah. I love President Trump. I never hide that fact. I think he's wonderful. I have a great relationship with him. I talk to him frequently. I'm so thankful for him and his family, as we all are. And I defend him all the time. I swear I would fight for that man, because he fought for us, and that's the kind of president we need back. And if he were to ask me, of course I would be honored.
There was more. She went on Twitter to talk about Zawahiri. Oh, and by the way, you can tell she's absolutely tickled plum pink at the idea that even the folks who live under bell jars at Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium and watch Real America News or whatever, that she's vice presidential timber. It just reminded me of a principle that we began identifying long before this program even went on the air, you know, all the way back to 1988, when George H.W. Bush nominated Dan Quayle to be his vice president, which was actually, even though Dan Quayle was a full-on idiot, was a brilliant move, because it was a way to make Republicans and Democrats alike pray for the good health of George H.W. Bush every day of his presidency, so that the presidency would not be delivered up unto an idiot. And at that point in time, many people thought, well, you know, there could never be someone in as high an office as that that would be as stupid as Dan Quayle. And back in 1988, we didn't know anything about George H.W. Bush's idiot son. Dub. And so we had to wait and be proven wrong in 2000. And then, as Dub exited the office on January the 20th, 2009, we all breathed a bit of a sigh of relief, even though he'd started a couple of wars of choice and slaughtered a million innocent Iraqi civilians and destabilized the entire Middle East. But somehow or another, we had managed to survive the W presidency, and we'd elected this brilliant younger man who spoke seriously and didn't talk about fish and people living together in peace. And what we have to ask ourselves is our children learning? And so surely this country could never place another person in the presidency as stupid as W. And since this is a prayer meeting Wednesday about the mickle powers of the goddess of irony, we tweaked her little pink tomato nose, and on January 20th, 2017, she tweaked back. And we got Nitwit Nero. And, of course, in 2008, John McCain's running mate was Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie. Sarah Palin, whom we thought, well, okay, she's dangerously stupid, but we didn't elect John McCain, so whew, we're safe. There will never be another woman nominated to be a vice president who's anywhere near as stupid as she is. And here then is marginal trailer queen dreaming the dreams of living the life. Matt in San Francisco, Donald J. Trump, DJT, MTG. Let's hear it for the Dumb and Dumber ticket. Or Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Yeah, precisely, Matt. So on Twitter yesterday, marginal trailer queen cast doubt on the assassination of Ayman al-Zawahiri. And there's another one of those pictures of them just, you know, looking so happy together. Happy together in hell now. And, well, marginal trailer queen tweeted, "November is coming, and proxy war with Russia, killing more people, and grinding Ukraine to a stump is not as popular with voters as the admin thought it would be. The White House admin looks extremely weak and controlled by Zelensky and the global world order. But don't be fooled. Democrats ain't done with weapon sales and money laundering in the form of humanitarian aid in Ukraine. They even pivoted back to killing an old Al-Qaeda terrorist so Biden could murmur his tough guy talk claiming he led the killing of Zawahiri. Biden should be impeached, not taking credit. If we were in Afghanistan for so many years, why is it we just found out where Zawahiri is and finally killed him? What trade was made for that intel? Is there proof he was killed? It was recently reported he was sick and dying." You know, I don't know, recently reported by what? Alex Jones? I mean, that's some Alex Jones level shit there. Yeah, and she went on and on and on. Is there proof he was killed? Jesus. What a maroon. But speaking of maroons, and this is kind of fun, Josh Hawley and Ass announced announced that he would oppose the inclusion of Finland and Sweden joining NATO. The only thing I can figure out is that somehow or another, this will require a modification of the alliance treaty, which is subject to Senate confirmation. So he got out his treason pen and wrote himself an op-ed, and back in July, the House had 18 members of the House. You can guess who the usual suspects are. Voted against a measure that supported Scandinavian countries, and he said the U.S. Shouldn't support Sweden and Finland joining NATO, saying America's greatest foreign adversary doesn't loom over Europe. It looms in Asia. I'm talking, of course, about the People's Republic of China. And when it comes to Chinese imperialism, the American people should know the truth. The United States is not ready to resist it. Expanding American security commitments in Europe now would only make that problem worse and America less safe. He is, of course, a highly poorly educated idiot. And I said the usual suspects opposed the House measure. Marginal trailer queen, Matt, it just gets worse. And Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert.
The Senate will soon vote on adding Sweden and Finland to NATO. According to the terms of NATO's founding treaty, that means the United States would be obliged to defend both countries in the event of a military attack. I intend to vote no.
Chinese imperialism. You know, two things can be true at the same time, Matt. Did they not teach you that at fucking Stanford or Harvard, wherever the hell? And lo and behold, and, you know, this is one of those cases of, come on, let's you and him fight, that bobble-throated freak from Arkansas, Tom Cotton, described... without naming Josh Hall an ass, he said, strange indeed. How could one disagree? After all, the last countries to join NATO, Montenegro and North Macedonia, were each approved by the Senate with only two no votes. And went on and said, let's be honest, who can oppose the much stronger cases for Finland and Sweden, countries that are far larger, far more capable, and far more strategically situated? It would be strange indeed for any senator who voted to allow Montenegro and North Macedonia into NATO to turn around and deny membership to Finland and Sweden. I would love to hear, and this is such language, and you need the accent for this, I would love to hear the defense of such a curious vote. Well, you can hear the dripping sarcasm for yourself.
Today. And really, how could one disagree? After all, the last countries to join NATO, Montenegro and North Macedonia, were each approved by the Senate with only two no votes. Those countries brought their own case for accession to NATO. But let's be honest. Who can deny the much stronger cases for Finland and Sweden, countries that are far larger, far more capable, and far more strategically situated? It would be strange indeed for any senator who voted to allow Montenegro or North Macedonia into NATO to turn around and deny membership to Finland and Sweden. I would love to hear the defense of such a curious
vote. I told you. I would love to hear the defense.
But some observers.
I would love to hear the defense.
And because of the way the antiquated, arcane rules of the Senate work out, since he did not name Josh Hall an ass, that meant that Josh Hall an ass couldn't necessarily jump up and say, "Well, I take umbrage at your remarks, sir. I will meet you tomorrow morning at dawn on the field of honor." You know, if we can get these Republicans fighting with each other enough, I think maybe we should consider, I almost hesitate to whisper this into the ear of the universe, but maybe we should consider repealing the ban on dueling. Because Democrats, when some Republican took umbrage, Democrats could just say, "Nah, fuck you." And that puts it in an end. I mean, there's a brilliant history of dueling in the United States Congress. I'd have to look up the name. Never mind. But they used to do that all the time. "I will meet you on the field of honor at dawn tomorrow." And it was always the Southern senators, you know. My honor has been, you have cast aspersions upon my asparagus, sir. And back then, Whigs were stupid enough to fall for it, or vice versa. And, you know, they managed it along the way to deplete the ranks a little bit. Maybe it would be... I mean, now we've got mass media, and We could pay-per-view it. I mean, I should probably stop this. But, you know, I for one, and I'm not a hawk, but the Finns whipped the living shit out of the Russians back when they were the Soviets. The Swedes are not to be trifled with. And I think it would... I mean, why not add them to the alliance? They were not in the alliance by their own choice. They wanted to remain neutral, but they understand, even though apparently some people here don't, the people nearest the problem understand how brutal, how repressive, and how eager to reestablish Russian dominance of Europe Putin is. He's horrible. He's a murderer. He's also a thug and a crook. But, you know, Josh Hawley, who loves him some insurrection, until he doesn't. Yeah, he took that different tack. Lee in New York says, "Why reject Sweden? They'll provide weapons, but some assembly will be required." Damn you, IKEA armaments. Oh, I know. I want that, like, they've got a, and you can't get them, they stay sold out. They've got a 3-foot-long plushy shark called Blahaj, and it's popular in the trans community because it's got the 3 trans flag colors, the trans pride, pink, blue, and white. Never mind. That's neither here nor there. Thanks, Lee. With regard to Sweden, Lee adds, "We must fear the invasion of a dancing queen. She claims to be young and sweet, only 17. Maybe they should offer up money, money, money." Oh, that's a gnur, Lee. You're not getting a cowbell for that. That's a, you know. And you know, Fernando. Shorty in LA says, "Girl, you know his lawyer did send those texts to the other side accidentally on purpose." Seemed like, first law of holes, seemed like, Shorty says, Alex Jones was the last to know that he should shut up and put the shovel down. But no, Alex kept picking up the shovel and finished digging his grave. The judge sounded like, wait for it. Then she sounded like, will you hurry up and just answer, Mr. Jones? TMI, Alex. TMI, Alex. Answer the fucking question. I know. I know. And Flavio asks, so why is Jones gloating on his show about the bankruptcy plot to tie up Sandy Hook damages for years? Because, well, Flavio, that's his grift. That's his shtick. That's how he's got to keep the rubes believing the unbelievable. And maybe his lawyers have told him. Did I say liars? I meant lawyers. Have told him that they'll tie things up for years. But they also told him that it was in the bag, and they'd sure enough handled those pesky discovery requests. Yeah. On Matt in San Francisco, marginal trailer queen. It's one of God's miracles that she hasn't electrocuted herself by blow-drying her hair in the shower. Now, that gets a cowbell. Goodness me. The image is just kind of beautiful. I mean, the metal image. And, of course, it was primary day yesterday in a number of states, and Stephen New York asks, did you award Kansas a cowbell? No, I didn't. I probably should. I was feeling kind of grim yesterday during the program about the prospects of women's rights to full citizenship in the state of Kansasstan. And God knows the fetus fetishists did everything they could to muddy up the waters. And the Kansans didn't fall for it. The constitutional amendment failed, and so, consequently, it remains constitutional law to the state of Kansas that, in fact, abortion is a constitutionally protected right in that state. I'm terribly, terribly proud of what they did. Of course, by no means is that the end of it. There are two more states that will consider constitutional measures to reduce women to second-class citizens. But Kansas got it right. And I'm proud of the voters there for seeing through the horseshit. Steve says, Kansas, let's be clear about something. The vote was 60 to 40. Also, turnout was double what it was in 2018. It could be that there is that a wave is forming, and it will be a wave of furious support for women's rights, and an abject repudiation of our majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties. Next door, however, in Missouristan, it was a bad night for Eric Greitens, because, among other things, Nitwit Nero, when asked who he endorsed in Missouri, answered, Eric. And Eric Schmidt and Eric Greitens were both vying for that same nomination. So Nitwit Nero, afraid of alienating his base of idiots, when asked who he supported in that race, simply answered, Eric. Yeah. The Kansas City Star said, the disgraced former president teased early Monday that he would make his long-awaited primary endorsement for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Roy Blunt. And I am therefore proud to announce that Eric has my complete and total endorsement. Without saying Greitens or Schmidt. Because he was afraid of being perceived as a loser, which he is, if his endorsee didn't win. So that meant that Eric Greitens tweeted, I'm honored to receive President Trump's endorsement. And Eric Schmidt said, it is truly an honor to have President Trump's endorsement in the Senate race. Yeah, well, how'd that work for Eric Greitens? Well, the Kansas City Star described Eric Greitens, who just got thumped, third place in the primary. Now, remember, this guy's a real dirtbag. I mean, maggots generally, right? But Greitens had to resign the governor's office in Missouri because he got caught threatening a woman, not his wife, with whom he had had sex, of whom he took lascivious photos. And then tried to intimidate the woman with them. The Kansas City Star writing again today. Greitens came in third. Abject humiliation for a candidate with such huge name recognition. He never should have wasted primary voters' time or his donors' money in the first place. He was accused of campaign finance violations and paid a fine and signed a consent decree with the Missouri Ethics Commission to settle an admission he'd misreported contributions. His former hairdresser credibly alleged he tied her up in his basement and forced himself on her sexually. And since his resignation, his ex-wife has testified under oath that he physically assaulted her and their children. And went on to say he showed no contrition about anything he'd done. Instead, voters got the same arrogant, violently threatening persona they'd come to know before, amped up even further. A commercial where he and a squadron of shock troops brandished rifles to go rhino hunting drew scorn and horror far outside Missouri's borders. And they point out that, unfortunately, he'll probably still try to run for office in the future. And the editorial board of the Kansas City Star said, please, y'all, don't give him any more money. Please. Yeah, there were. You're right, Flavio. There were three Erics running in Missouri. Greitens, Schmidt, and a third candidate, Eric McElroy, also ran. And the question now is, can the Democrats put up a credible candidate against the Republican nominee? And apparently there is some thinking that the Democratic contender may be able to do so. So from the Dare to Dream file, let's think. Florida, that's one senator, if we can win. North Carolina, Stan, that's two. He's not getting nearly the amount of press that he needs and deserves. Charles Booker in Kentucky, Stan. Running against, wouldn't it be beautiful? I mean, would we be tempted to run naked, celebrating in the streets, maybe in Kentucky, Stan, if Rand Paul and that thing on his head got retired? That's three. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mills there. Further enhanced his status as a front runner for stupidest man in the entire in that entire body. That's four. Ahia, where Annette's least favorite human being on the planet, J.D. Vance, is trailing Tim Ryan. That's five. Pennsylvania, where Mehmet Oz can't stop stepping on rakes. That's six. Any more? I mean, the Senate candidate in Alabama doesn't have a prayer, so no. But a 56 to 44 majority in the Senate? That would be enough to get rid of the filibuster here and there. And Joe and Curtsy and Kirsten could go and pound sand. Like I said, dare to dream. A cue ball, by the way. It was primary day in Arizona, Stan, too. A guy suspected of being the Q in cue ballery was running in the 2nd Congressional District of Arizona, Stan. Namely, a fellow by the name of Watkins. Among other things, back last January, Watkins tried to convince the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing freaks who believed him that Nitwit Nero really had held a rally in Arizona, Stan, and it wasn't a body double on stage. And he got under Carrie Lake's skin, a gubernatorial candidate, when he posted a photo of those two together. And here's the... Well, here's the bottom line. Q came in dead last. So Arizona, Stan, is far from being out of the woods. In that 2nd congressional district, the incumbent is Representative Tom O'Halloran. He's a Democrat. And one may only hope that Halloran holds on to his seat. God, these people. And by the way, I need to say thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Charlene. Our fundraising goal relative to Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, a chance to eliminate our deficit for now, which stands at or stood at $600 or $597 actually, and was reduced to $557. Charlene reduced that further. In terms of the challenge, $257. Charlene reduced that to $242. So we got $242 to go to meet that matching challenge, an opportunity for you to double your money and help keep this program on the air. Because that's the only way it stays on the air. My dear, dear Robin Steve in New York says, remember, it's not Ahia, because that drives Nikki to distraction. the compromise is the Buckeye State. I'll make a note of it once I get something stuck in my head. It tends to stay stuck until we loosen it up a little bit. I mentioned Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. Mandela Barnes will be running against Ron Johnson. Mandela Barnes is a Democrat. And she referred to Ron Johnson as a self-serving millionaire yesterday, because Ron Johnson from Wisconsin decided to step on what used to be the third rail of American politics, but is also now a purity test among you know, the maggots and the like. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mills there, said he wanted to make both Medicare and Social Security discretionary. He went on some right-wing radio show to unburden himself of this notion, this right-wing fetish object for a generation and generations and generations. And you know, the rakes were all over the yard.
Yes, and you know, defense spending has always been discretionary. So VA spending is discretionary. What's mandatory are things like Social Security and Medicare. If you qualify for the entitlement, you just get it no matter what the cost. And our problem in this country is that more than 70% of our federal budget, of our federal spending, is all mandatory spending. It's on automatic pilot. You just don't do proper oversight. You don't get in there and fix the programs going bankrupt. It's just on automatic pilot. What we ought to be doing is we ought to turn everything into discretionary spending, so it's all evaluated, so that we can fix problems or fix programs that are broken, that are going to be going bankrupt. But no. Because, again, as long as things are on automatic pilot, we just continue to pile up debt. It's mortgage our kids' future. It's this massive debt burden.
Entitlement. That's right-wing code for welfare. I don't know if anybody's bothered to tell Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, but Social Security is not an entitlement, and neither is Medicare, because Americans pay for it all their working lives. It's not a handout, but not according to Ron Johnson, and Mandela Barnes is absolutely correct. He is, in fact, a self-serving millionaire. Mandela Barnes went on and said he wants to strip working people of the Social Security and Medicare they've earned. Wisconsinites pay into Social Security through a lifetime of hard work, and they're counting on this program and Medicare, but Ron Johnson just doesn't care. Mandela Barnes right now is the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. And having stepped on the rake, there were a lot of people who wanted to point that out. Among other things, Social Security Works, a good organization, said Johnson wants to end the Social Security and Medicare guarantee. This would be a disaster for seniors and people with disabilities in Wisconsin and across the country. Mark Pocan got involved and said, you know that money you paid all your life out of your paycheck for Social Security and Medicare? Ron Johnson wants to steal your money and potentially cut benefits from both. That's a more extreme position than almost anyone in the United States Senate. Time for the other Mandela. That's Mandela Barnes' Twitter handle. Yeah. But like I said, it's a Republican fetish object. Do you remember? It was January of 2005 when dim leader, celebrating his sort of re-election.
Wasn't elected the first time. Never mind.
He said, hey, you know what? I done been re-elected, and that means you got me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. So I'm going to start by prioritizing Social Security. Social Security needs to be on the Wall Street. And thanks to the filibuster, he got stopped. But Ron Johnson, well, he's not going to let go. Because last year he said that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Among other things, he said he wants to raise the retirement age for receipt of Social Security payments. It's already raised for my generation. I got to make it to 67 before I see a damn dime. The Wisconsin Democratic Party, via their spokesman, said Ron Johnson's made clear he would cut Social Security and Medicare despite the devastating impact it would have on older Wisconsinites. Is it Wisconsinites? Somehow I always figured it was Wisconsinians. Never mind. During his years in D.C., Johnson has lost touch with Wisconsinites, and voters will hold him accountable in November, and I hope he's right. Steve points out that Social Security being discretionary sounds like a Frank Luntz version of what's really privatized Social Security. Exactly. So that Republicans can go in, if it became discretionary, so to speak, Republicans could just come in and zero it out. And they would do it with both malice aforethought and relish and gusto. Emilio asks, is Ron Johnson trying to steal Skeletor Rick's shtick? Kind of sounds like it, doesn't it? Good call. Good call, Emilio. Breaking news from the New York Times. Here comes trouble. The Times reporting that the U.S. supply of monkeypox vaccine will be limited for months after officials waited too long to ask the maker to process enough vials. The federal government's now distributing about 1.1 million doses, less than a third of the 3.5 million that health officials now estimate are needed to fight the outbreak. The next delivery of 500,000 doses is not expected until October. What the hell's happening here? And that's not a rhetorical question. We got exposed via the pandemic, and our production processes, our supply chains are an absolute train wreck. Baby formula, tampons, toilet paper, Jesus, injectable estrogen. Seems like every day there's a different shortage. You know there was the great saltine shortage of 2022. I don't know the answer. How did this happen? Where did it fall apart? Is it a matter of not having a sufficient number of people to do the work? Too many people got sick? Too many people died? Or is this, and it could be, is this a sort of low-level labor action, an undeclared labor action, where businesses can't operate because people no longer want to work for their shitty wages? I mean, I don't know what the pay is like in a lab producing monkeypox vaccine or producing baby formula. You'd think those would be good jobs, but then again, this is Merca. I don't know. Remember, Jeremy in Vermont reminds us, remember the white supremacy maggots that pointed their loaded guns at Black Lives Matter members walking past saying they were a threat to their yard? The very same pieces of shit, this was of course in St. Louis, the very same pieces of shit who smashed beehives of a Jewish school, those different maggots who shared a property line without warning because they claimed it was over the line on their side. Well, karma, motherfucker. The guy in that relationship ran for office in Missouri and last night got thoroughly beaten, only receiving over just about 3% of the overall vote. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That yeah. There was a Jewish school next to those people's revolting mansion, and they destroyed them. And I guess Josh Hawley, an ass, didn't get his wish. The Senate has voted to add Finland and Sweden to NATO. That's a very big deal, and of course, the sweet, huggable, lovable, cuddleable, homicidal Vlad Putin said that would be intolerable to Mother Russia. We'll see what that means. Maybe he'll launch more missiles at you. I don't know. I know, Flavio. Well, thanks for the reminder. Don't forget Wisconsin Representative Paul Eddie Munster Ryan, the Ayn Rand fan who fantasized about privatizing Social Security while he was standing around a keg back in his college days. It was back in 2012 when Eddie earned the moniker Granny Starver. It has long been a fetish object. There's no getting around it. Remember, says Ron and Raleigh, if the Republicans hadn't been so adamant about giving Obama anything that looked like a win, he would have cut Social Security and implemented chain CPI. This is true, Ron. There was that that moment. God, I think it was Alan Grayson who described it. I'm trying to remember. I think I heard it at a Netroots Nation, maybe the one in Vegas, where he said that he'd been on a plane with Obama, and someone asked President Obama what his greatest policy dreams were, and he answered, entitlement reform. So, Ron and Raleigh, you're not wrong. I don't think you are, no. I told you it was going to be a wild-ass Wednesday. And, by the way, having been thoroughly humiliated, closing arguments, because once again, somebody, journalists don't know the difference. They don't know that trials begin with opening statements and end with closing arguments. This text saying, the closing statements of Alex Jones, no, the closing arguments, unfolded this afternoon. And, the lawyer for Alex Jones said that the Sandy Hook families couldn't even spend all the money that they were asking for, even if they were awarded it. Let's just put it this way. It takes a lot of chutzpah, I guess. It takes a lot of chutzpah to compare, say, Alex Jones, a charlatan who purveys paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverages. Let's just let you hear it.
There was a Lutheran minister named Martin Niemöller.
Now, before this goes any further, let's do remember, this is the same fuck-up who gave over the entirety of Jones's phone and set his own client up to be potentially prosecuted criminally for perjury and fined civilly for same. And you know, with the mention of Martin Niemöller, where this is going to go.
The 1930s. And he was imprisoned in a concentration camp. And when he got out, he reflected on the fact that he had stood quiet. And he said, first they came for the communists. And I said, I'm not a communist, and didn't do anything. Then they came for the trade unionists. And I said, I'm not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews. And I said, I'm not a Jew. And when they came for me, there was no one left. It's been an honor to talk to you.
Oh, my God. That's right, Alex Jones. Communist, trade unionist, Jew. Persecuted by the mean, mean Sandy Hook families, whom he caused to be tormented over the course of years upon years upon years upon years. That's the best he's got. It reminds me of the end of The In-Laws, one of my favorite comedies, 1978, where they're standing there waiting to be shot by General Garcia's men. And Peter Falk says, Alan Arkin says, you got to do something. And Peter Falk says, General, I object to this entire proceeding. But General, spare this man, Sheldon Cornbett. He gives of his time to help any number of little Hispanic children who could otherwise not afford braces. And Alan Arkin responds, that's it? That's it? The braces bit? That's what you got? Same. Did you notice that he was struggling? And I imagine he would be struggling for words. Because earlier that day, he had been exposed as a monumental malpracticing fuck-up. And I suppose now the... jury has the case in their hands, and hopefully they've elected a foreman, and they've got a piece of paper, the jury form, and they've answered all the questions, yes, and the foreman has a pen in their hand and has written down the number one and started writing zeros till their wrist cramps. It's interesting, though, because for some reason or another, I had occasion to look up the history of Martin Niemöller's words. And he was imprisoned. He was in a concentration camp. But over the course of his career upon his release, he also reflected upon his complicity. At first, he was complicit with the Nazi regime. And then when his morals finally kicked in, he spoke out, was imprisoned, and gave that same recitation several times over the following years. But, yeah, the nerve. Suggesting somehow that this radio and internet-based huckster is being persecuted? Really? Comparing the lawyer, the pettifogging lawyer, comparing his client to victims of the Holocaust. Well, nastiness is what nastiness is. Oh, by the way, I need to take a quick break because I looked over and I was like, where's the stress line phone? It's in the car. I took it with me on the trip. So if you've been trying to reach via the stress line phone, My apologies. It's ringing wildly away out in the car. So I'm going to take a moment and go out and retrieve it so that we can actually do some conversation radio, because that's what this is. Will you please bear with me and stand by for just a moment, please? I'll be right back.
Okay, all better now. Sorry about the delay. I've got the stress line phone back in the studio now. I feel much better. If you would like to engage in some conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. You know how Bob Kincaid Horn via Skype. And the stress line phone is, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And it was out in the car, and the phone is very hot, so it's going to have to cool down a little bit, but if you want to get involved in the program, eventually you can use the stress line phone, but right now you can get through on Skype just as easy as you please. Among other things, we might want to talk about what happened in Kansas. You know, years and years ago, there was a very famous book called What's the Matter with Kansas? And that book attempted to analyze the politics of that state. And at that time, it was extremely red. And Kansas is still red. It is filthy with Republicans. But nonetheless, that 60-40 vote yesterday repudiating the Republican attempt to reduce Kansas women to second-class citizens was shocking, to say the least. And if you are a progressive, a liberal, Democrat, what have you, it could even be deemed to be, well, encouraging. It may turn out, depending on where one is, I mean, this of course does not apply to, say, Alabama or Mississippi Stan, etc., Arkansas Stan. But there may be a shockwave may pass through American politics come November. One certainly hopes. Agence France-Presse had a think piece, an analysis, writing, ever since the Supreme Court overturned the nationwide right to terminate a pregnancy, ever since the Supreme Court overturned the nationwide right to terminate a pregnancy in June, no word there on July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, or May. No, ever since Dobbs, and remember the central line from the dissent, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. U.S. conservatives have been nervously asking whether their triumphant push to severely restrict access to the procedure, a decades-long dream, has gone too far in the run-up to the midterms. In Kansas, they got an answer. The state's a Republican stronghold, but in Tuesday's referendum, a bid to remove abortion rights from the Kansas Constitution was rejected by 59-41% with unusually heavy turnout. I mean, heavenly days. When a blood-red state like Kansas says no to a Republican fetish object like abortion, I think AFP rightly notes that it could be a sign of something. Planned Parenthood issued a statement saying, tonight's overwhelming defeat of the ballot referendum in Kansas shows the massive support for abortion rights among voters and serves as a clear warning to anti-abortion politicians across the country. Their time is up. I'm not quite so sure that I am entirely as optimistic as Planned Parenthood is. But one thing is clear, as we move toward November, unless you're in one of the aforementioned hardcore maggot states, Republicans probably aren't going to run heavy on all the precious little fetuses, as they saved.
over at Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Alexis McGill, also the president of Planned Parenthood, said, as the first state to vote on abortion rights following the fall of Roe v. Wade, Kansas is a model for a path to restoring reproductive rights across the country through direct democracy. We have the opportunity to protect abortion access at the ballot box in November. We know that Kansas will not be our last fight or our last victory. Claire McCaskill, former centrist, center-right senator from Missouri, said on MSNBC, this should be a big flashing signal to every Democratic candidate out there. I hope it can be. I hope determined women in this country and their allies will step up bravely, boldly, and strongly to save this country, because it is no hyperbole, it is no exaggeration to say that the very future of this country is up this November. You know it, I know it. But it's far from a done deal. Mark Kelly in Arizona, a moderate, will be challenged by Blake Masters. He won the Republican Senate primary in Arizona stand. As did the Trump endorsed Secretary of State candidate Mark Finchem, a proponent of the big lie. He won, and among other things, he's tied to Meal Team 6, among others. He's tied to an ultra-right-wing, insurgent, treasonous, fake militia. Phony militia. All these militia groups, we should bear in mind, are exactly that. They're fake. They are not a well-regulated militia. They're just a group of gunned-up malcontents who are looking forward to the opportunity to start shooting people. And we need to bear that in mind. But I hope sincerely that Kansas is a bellwether for the rest of the country. You know, even in West Virginia, the constitutional amendment a couple of years ago that said there's no constitutional right to abortion in this state barely passed. Barely. And I think people are far more engaged now. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned in yesterday's program a guy named Ash. Ash is an activist in this state, trans person. Testified before the West Virginia legislature about rape, was discounted and derided by a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist Christian by the name of Azinger. And Ash is trying to take the high road. He said to the delegates who misgendered me, called me an abomination for being trans and having an abortion, to the pro-life woman who smiled over my rape, I hope you find peace. I may be an abomination, but I will never stop fighting for my community or for safe access to abortion. Imagine that. Mike Azinger, his specific statement, I couldn't find it yesterday. I have it here in front of me now.
The arrogance of some people. Why do you assume I know about your pathetic statement, Capito read on the floor? You were born a female and always, always will be a female. And you're the one who does not care about the victims of rape. If they get pregnant, you want them to kill their baby, which they'll live with for the rest of their life. I'm very sorry for the unspeakable tragedy that took place in your childhood, but God heals and God is compassionate.
It's just that Mike Azinger isn't. And it's, well, again, what I said yesterday. It's not entirely a matter of these miserable legislators. It's also about the people who send them to office. And it's not just about the people who show up. You know, there's God in primaries, the turnout is minuscule. It's not that big in off-year elections. But you know who else has a hand in people like this Mike Azinger being a member of a state legislature? The people who don't show up.
Oh, hell, one side's as bad as the other. Ain't a nickel's worth of difference between a Democrat and a Republican. They're all the same. They're all crooked.
Well, that's not fucking true. One side is not identical to the other in desiring to render women second-class citizens as a matter of law. One side did not attack the Capitol of the United States in an act of terrorist insurrection. But that's the sort of soft voter suppression that Republicans goddamn well love. They love it. Because it keeps people who might come out and speak for themselves from doing so. And from the Department of, oh no, this is not a joke. The story actually comes from The Guardian. As of an announcement Monday in the state of Georgistan, Jesus, how embarrassing. In the state of Georgistan, it is now a matter of state tax law that the state of Georgia, for tax purposes, will now recognize any unborn child with a detectable human heartbeat as eligible for an individual income tax dependent exemption. You heard that right. From the moment that the fraudulent electrical pulse that they claim is a heartbeat occurs, you can write the wad of tissue off on your taxes in Georgia. From the 20th of July onward, anyone in Georgia can claim a dependent exemption of up to $3,000 for a detectable heartbeat embryo. And the State Tax Department of Georgia has determined that that may occur as early as 6 weeks gestation, before most women even know they're pregnant. But Now you can't just say, "Well, we're going to claim our little wad of tissue." You have to be prepared to show medical documentation that the precious little fetus is real. Relevant medical records or other supporting documentation, if requested by the revenue department. Gives a whole new meaning to the old hillbilly term, revenuers. Pardon me, ma'am. Just put your feet in these stirrups. I'm going to have a look around. Now, I'm from the tax department. Doesn't that just beat cats fucking? Holy cow. And I hope the state tax department of Georgia is ready for a whole lot of claims. Yeah, maybe you can just staple your EPT to the to your tax form. And it doesn't. And you know what's interesting here is that apparently you don't have to necessarily carry the baby to term. Stacey Adams campaign manager, Lauren Groh Wargo, said, so what happens when you claim your fetus as a dependent and then have a spontaneous abortion later in the pregnancy? You get investigated both for tax fraud and an illegal abortion? Pretty much. And, of course, this is just a natural outgrowth of all this insanity. It was not quite a month ago when a woman in Texas who had been pulled over... she'd been pulled over for using the HOV lane and being the only person in the car. Two or more in the HOV lane, right? I mean, rules is rules. This is not Vietnam. But she said that when she was ticketed... She said, "You can't give me a ticket. I'm pregnant. There's two people in this car, even though it only looks like there's one." And so the cop wrote her the ticket anyway. And she has contested the ticket and is going to argue in court that they are... that the cop was in the wrong and the ticket must be dismissed because she is two people. I mean, it's what they wanted, isn't it? Personhood? Roger, for instance, in the chat room said, "My question is, what is the definition of a heartbeat? The blood flow or the amplified electric pulse? Then the question is, what happens when there's a miscarriage in month six?" First of all, we're going to stop using the term miscarriage, Roger, and I'm not giving orders.
Quit telling us what...
No. I think we benefit when we use the... And I've said this before. I think we benefit when we use the actual medical term for it. Spontaneous abortion. Because among other things, miscarriage is a hateful word. Hateful. It implies that mama has carried the baby wrong. And for something that happens in up to 50% of all human pregnancy, that's just scientifically inaccurate. But it's a good question. And you know, there is no such thing as a fetal heartbeat when there's no heart. It is nothing more than an amplified electrical signal. You can't point to the heart and go, "Well, there it is," at 6 weeks. "Well, there you are, Brother Deacon Asa. You're right." "Wait a minute," says Asa. "This now means that Uncle Daddy is potentially going to have to pay child support for an additional 7.5 months? No fair. Maggots are moving out of Texas for that reason." No, Georgia, Asa, Georgia. Keep your maggot states square. Yeah. Law of unintended consequences. It's what they wanted. Let's go over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I think women have to claim the vernacular instead of allowing the patriarchy to continue to define it, you know, in terms of the word miscarriage. So I would agree 100% with that, not using that term anymore. It's Darlene from Connecticut. I tried to call in earlier, but for some reason I kept getting pushed to voicemail. So I guess somebody was on the line.
No. That's because the stress line was in the car.
Oh, okay. So I missed that part. I'm sorry. I missed program to let them listening in and out. And then I called my mom, you know, got to call mother. Kansas, I'm hoping that other conservative states follow suit and do what Kansas did. And if so, then, and I'm on the cusp of a thought experiment. I kind of wanted to sort of play around with it with you. So,
okay.
You know, if we see more of this, like what we saw with Kansas, and based on the article I read about it, it looked like it cut across, you know, all political leanings. You know, it was quite a strong consensus, no matter, you know, conservative, liberal, moderate, what have you. So then if we see more of this, can that potentially be added to the list of grievances for impeachment against justices, like Kavanaugh, like Amy COVID Barrett, the handmaid, Gorsuch, and I would love to even drag Alito into it, in the sense that how could these scions of justice get it so wrong? That in fact, you know, let's use a word, a thing they made up, that in fact Roe was in fact super precedent all along. And that it is not as controversial as they lied to us Dobbs decision or what have you, or before Congress. Is there something impeachable getting it so egregious? This is a quote unquote getting it egregiously wrong, quote unquote, because we know what they're up to. But go ahead, sorry. Yeah.
Can I take a run at that?
Yeah.
If you look at the earliest impeachment of a sitting Supreme Court justice, that was in 1803, 1804, and it was Supreme Court Justice Chase. And he was tried in the Senate, and he was acquitted. Aaron Burr was roundly said to have presided as Vice President of the United States and therefore President of the Senate masterfully, because he was a brilliant man. And ultimately, what came out of that was the idea that you don't impeach a Supreme Court justice just because you don't like their politics. And in this case, it sounds like maybe that would be a matter of not liking the politics, not liking the political nature of the decision they reached. Because once you start arguing with them over the rightness or wrongness of the decision, it becomes a swearing contest. My guess is, Darlene, that wouldn't fly. But, you know, the substantive issues relative to lying under oath, I think that remains the better choice.
I'm not saying to exclude that lying under oath bit. I'm saying, you know, to add to it.
Right.
So you're agreeing then that a woman's ability to have private conversations with her doctor about any and all medical issues is political? That it's for them to politicize it? That if you call them out on it, you're being political?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying they I'm saying they reached a political decision, and while you can disagree with it, it isn't, at least according to the standards set forth in the Chase impeachment, it's not an impeachable offense. It's not a high crime or misdemeanor.
Well, why are we being bootstrapped by what happened in 1800-whatever?
Well, because supposedly we live by precedent.
Well, they don't. You know, you had him, Alito, essentially saying, preceding Republican-nominated justices were all wrong. Who the hell is he to even say that? I mean, it was wrong from the start. I mean, to me, women weren't even factored into the calculus of his decision, of what he wrote in Dobbs. We have to be careful not to buy into their argument that everything is political, because when you do that, that just means you just don't like it. You know what I'm saying? In terms of, I see that here, happening here. If somebody puts a pride flag up or a sign, at the local public library that, all people are welcome, and they put it in different languages. Oh, that's too political. That's what Republicans do. It's too political. They continue to set the framework. And I find that troubling. So I guess when they sit there and they say, well, this is highly controversial, but like with Kansas, you see them. It's not controversial. It's crossing all political stripes.
Absolutely. I mean, if the polling data is to be believed, 80% of the American people believe that abortion should be available for anyone who wants it.
And, so, like I said, Roe was actually super precedent. It was as powerful a precedent as Brown, which I believe is what I recall the handmaid had said. There are just certain things that just aren't questioned. So, what they can do then is create an argument or create a question where there isn't one. So it kind of blows the super precedent idea out of the water. But on the flip side, let's call them at their game. They keep making shit up. Precedent versus super precedent versus judicial philosophy. So anyway, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out, but it seems you're saying no. So the other thing that I also would like to see is, again, and this is where the messaging is a problem with Democrats, but and maybe something has been done, or they're going to work on it. But the whole lying, the whole the attempt to misdirect people in Kansas to vote yes on that amendment. They were trying to dumb down the electorate. That should be illegal. Now, I don't know if the Justice Department is going to do anything. It seems to me like they have an awful lot on their plate. But to me, that was, and these kind of shenanigans have been happening in terms of misdirection, and we've been seeing this for quite some time. So this stuff can't be tolerated. They got to basically do the Sandy Hook family kind of, you know, show no mercy and push back at this stuff, because there has to be moral, there has to be something that's wrong. And is it illegal? And if it isn't illegal, why isn't it illegal to misdirect people to vote yes for this? My guess is how they framed it was probably somewhat complex, but framed the referendum question. But that's the other thing I'm wondering, which will also then lead me to who sets the budget for the Justice Department, because it sounds like they need to hire a hell of a lot more attorneys. I assume does Biden, he presents the budget, but it's in the executive branch, but it's the House that sets the funding, right?
The House has the purse strings, given the fact that we can't pass a budget, I can't remember the last time we actually passed a budget. We're living from continuing resolution to continuing resolution, and have been for eons. The DOJ's budget, and for that matter, the Supreme Court's budget, is in the hands of Congress.
And Biden has bootstrapped himself, or at least stuck his own foot in his mouth, because it's not like he can openly call for, you know, increasing the DOJ's budget, right? Or asking for more money, because then it will look like he's on a witch hunt. You know, because he's supposed to make nice and not interfere and all of that. So anyway, there you go. That was just what I had to offer.
Well, that's a bunch, Darlene.
Yeah, you think so? Oh, you're off the client, so I don't know what to make of it. But anyway, I would like to see. I don't know. I guess I'd like to see more heads roll. And quite honestly, more all of a sudden, like, I guess Democrats and Biden suddenly woke up and they're starting to do more things. And they were questioned in the press briefing, you know, why suddenly now, you know, there's been weeks that have gone by and I don't feel a sufficient answer was given. I don't know if they just took encouragement from Kansas. But I don't like that. They should have been on the forefront immediately with whatever they could possibly do, because, you know, pregnancy doesn't wait. It does not wait. The person who was doing the lane there, well, you know, there's two people here. She's probably also the same kind of person that would say, you know, my body, my choice when it comes to wearing a mask, and then immediately say, except for abortion. I think she's one of those. So there you go.
Well, in talking about Kansas, I saw a quote from Charisse Davids. She's a Democrat who represents a district in Kansas, and she's indigenous, and she's also gay. And in explaining today why what happened in Kansas happened, she said she talked to a constituent named Katrina, and that Katrina said to her, my 2-year-old daughter shouldn't have to grow up with less rights than her mother. And Charisse Davids said, I think that's it. I agree. And that's probably why that's a decent reason for why Kansas voters rejected the amendment, no matter the determined efforts of the Republican Party. Because apparently this does cut across party lines. And oddly enough, well, you know, Republican women have pregnancies they don't want too. Especially, you know, when they get it on with somebody who's not their one man and one woman Christian marriage.
Well, would you say Kansas is sort of in the same vein as, say, Kentucky? I mean, they're living like in these shit Republican states where they really don't get anything. They're on the ground living with these decisions. You know, I think of Kentucky and what has happened there with the flooding and the storms, and, you know, and I think of who their senator is. They're a very prominent senator who's just enriched himself as their senator and has done nothing for that state, and now it's going to be up to the blue states, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, you know, California. We're going to be paying to haul that state out of trouble. Part of me is like, yeah, we got to pitch in and do it. But on the flip side, I'm like, why the fuck do you keep putting Mitch McConnell in? I don't, you know, part of me is like, you need to live with your consequences. Make him give up part of his $38 million fortune, which probably doesn't include his wife's fortune.
Oh, it doesn't.
So.
Well, look, I mean, I oddly enough, when I drive to Alabama, I spend more time in Kentucky than I go, you know, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama.
Than you care to?
Well, no, that's I spend more time in Kentucky than any other state. I'd stopped to get a bite of lunch on the way down, and I got behind, and on the way back out to the highway, I got behind it was a BMW convertible, and lo and behold, the fucker had a Friends of Coal license plate. And of course, when you whether it's West Virginia or Virginia, when you get a Friends of Coal license plate, that sends a portion of the proceeds to the Friends of Coal, which is just a lobby group. It's a front group. It's a PR sham. And, you know, in eastern Kentucky, people have been drawn to the polls, much as is the case with any wedge issue that the Republicans use, Darlene. They've been encouraged to vote. You remember the Obama war on coal, I'm sure. And, you know, Mitch McConnell was a beneficiary of that.
So
Rand Paul was a beneficiary of that. And they vote. They vote along these lines because it's, you know, it's a shell game. It's a fraud. It's a three card Monte game. And as a result, they wind up with massive flooding. But I just don't have it in me to look at them in their suffering and say, "Well, you brought it on yourselves." Because you can say that you could at least in theory say that about the 29 miners who were incinerated beyond recognition as human beings at Upper Big Branch or any other mining disaster. Well, you took the damn job. But the fact of the matter is, you know,
I understand that, Republicans will do that, though. I mean, look what Trump did. You know,
Forget
the 4 years he was there. He was screwing over blue states as much as he could. That motherfucker. He didn't give a shit. He didn't give a shit.
No, and let me add in one other thing about us. You know, we're going to go in and clean them up and fix them up. It's probably not going to be the case. FEMA. You know, having dealt with them once, FEMA is notoriously useless when it comes to when it comes to actually helping the people who need the help the most.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I mean, they're talking about it being months before fresh water, before the water systems are restored in eastern Kentucky. How do people live? I mean, for a long time in southern West Virginia. Especially in Boone and Raleigh counties, you know, the coal industry ruined people's well water up a particular holler. And only Coal River Mountain Watch gave enough of a damn about that. Coal River Mountain Watch was trucking water to these individual homes up Printer Holler for month after month after month after month. State of West Virginia was nowhere to be found. Federal government missing in action, and that's one of the problems with these kinds of responses, is that people tend to perceive them to be more than they are.
Right. Well, I agree.
The people at Printer Holler.
That doesn't belie the fact that it'll be the blue state's money. Going there I agree with you. I don't want to see people suffering no matter where they're at. On the flip side, that same senator that they fucking put in there every 6 years will stop at nothing. Well, he already has destroyed. I mean, look what he's done. His actions have helped take away a critical right that we as women had. I mean, I was, 7 years old when Roe was passed? I haven't really known life, being a conscious, politically conscious individual. I haven't known life without that decision being in place, and they've created chaos. So I kind of disagree. I still disagree. I feel like that should be added to the list of grievances to impeach those motherfuckers. They went too far. They took away a viable right. That is in and of itself unprecedented. And just the cognitive dissonance, the shitty reasoning is just unprofessional. His behavior, Alito going to that whatever religious conference thing, was it in another country?
Yeah, Rome, sponsored
was
by...
Was it in another country?
Yeah, Rome, sponsored by Notre Dame University.
So here's this fucker going to this other country talking about his triumph and American jurisprudence and bashing people from other countries who complained about the decision. I mean, the cognitive dissonance is it is about their religious dominance. And we all know it's just intellectually dishonest, and just it's not worthy of what we consider to be a viable, to be respected, co-equal branch of government. Their power is now, they are like the most powerful branch, because, and that's why the Super Congress thing that was mentioned in the I don't remember which magazine it was, referring to them as a super Congress or super legislature. Democrats again are just fucking up things because the message is not forward thinking enough. It's along the same lines as Klobuchar thing. We just need two senators. That's all we need. Just two more Democratic senators. That's all we need. No, you want to take it all. Hello, Democrats. We all know that the moment they pass this so-called law, this bill to protect women's access, immediately it'll be a rapid fire escalation right to the Supreme Court, and they're going to overturn it. They're going to say it's unconstitutional. They'll just make up any old shit like they did with the overturning of Roe. Again, it's not co-equal.
Well, hold on here for a second. You bring up the Rome thing, Darlene, and I think you're correct in that regard, mm-hmm. because there's an argument to be made for a high crime or misdemeanor taking place in that event. The problem is we won't have the paperwork to prove whether it was or wasn't until 2023, because the Supreme Court is above the law. That needs to be remedied legislatively. And because, otherwise they get to do whatever they want. The classic example being fat, dead Tony Scalia going duck hunting with Dick Cheney, who had a case before the court. And he said, no, I don't have a conflict of interest. I'll be fair about this. It ain't nothing just because he's my good buddy and the vice president. We won't talk about it while we're in the duck blind. Bullshit. But the things he said in that speech, especially because it was said in a foreign land, could be construed as a high crime or misdemeanor. And we have to remember, Darlene, that when we say high crime and misdemeanor, we're not talking about a statutory crime. We're talking about, and we talked about this a lot during the impeachment of Trump. It is a term of art. It had a specific meaning to the framers that we don't necessarily think of. But we could, I think, you could make a colorable claim for that being a high crime or misdemeanor. The difference being, how do you make a high crime or misdemeanor out of the Dobbs opinion itself? I mean, if that's the case, let's go look at a lot of their other cockamamie decisions, too. And it probably wouldn't pass muster with the Congress. Perjury might. And everything sort of hinges on what happens in November because, you know, it's that old line, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen this. It's absolutely brilliant. And the audio is, it's fine without the video. The folks at Juice Media that produce what they call honest government ads down in Australia, up over down under, have decided in their third season to expand into other countries. And so they took a run at the Supreme Court of the United States. And this is absolutely brilliant because, among other things, everything they say is pretty much factual. Check this out.
Hello, I'm from the U.S. government. No, not that. Or that. Your actual government, the Supreme Court. You know, the guys who brought you voter suppression, Citizens United, and this global terrorist, SCOTUS.
Bush.
Even at the best of times, SCOTUS gives zero fucks about democracy. We answer to nobody, we overrule laws made by Congress, our justices are appointed for life, and you don't even elect us. To be fair, you barely elect the people who do appoint us. But here we are. And now that we finally have enough Federalist Society nutjobs on the bench, we'll be using this court's unchecked power to wrong some rights, like the right for women to have no control over their own bodies, the right for kids to be indoctrinated at school, the next mass shooter's right to flaunt their weapon in public, and the right for polluters to kill even more of you in heat waves, floods, and fires. But we're only just getting started. In our next term, we'll decide if Republicans have the right to steal the next presidential election. That's right, we'll be ruling on the theory of independent state legislature. Independent state legislature is a judicial fart cooked up by these three bandits who helped steal the 2000 election in what's widely regarded as one of our shittest rulings ever. The theory proposes that during presidential elections, state legislatures have the power to ignore your votes and choose their own electors, which is handy if none of your favorite presidents have won the popular vote this century. And if state courts try to stop this shitfuckery by upholding their constitutions, the theory says SCOTUS should step in to decide the outcome of the election. Yep, just like what happened in 2000. History was almost repeated at the last election when Il Duce asked us to use this very theory to invalidate your mail-in ballots in a bunch of swing states. Unfortunately, we didn't quite have the numbers to help him out back then. But now, we do. Trump 24. Brought to you by SCOTUS. Legal experts say it would be hypocritical of us to embrace a law with no constitutional basis after striking down this law for having no constitutional basis. But they overlook a key aspect of our jurisprudence. We don't give a shit. We're just here to impose our fucked up ideology.
Lick our SCOTUS.
What's that? How can you stop us? Well, introducing more justices and term limits would be a start, but that would require an actual majority in both the House and Senate. Better vote in those midterms. Might be the last free election you get. Failing that, you'll have to find a way to show us you're not going to stand for six unelected pieces of shit rat-fucking your democracy anymore. You know, general strikes, mass protests, all good things we've been working hard to outlaw. Until then, enjoy the ride as we take you back to 1787, or whatever this frat boy imagines that to be. Probably a cross between Handmaid's Tale and Beer Fest. Whatever. Fuck you. SCOTUS. Authorized by the Department for Thinly Disguised Plans to Usher in a Theocratic Christian Regime.
I wish we... You know, the Lincoln Project comes close, but these people are geniuses. And the fact
they're really good. And again, you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, potty words notwithstanding, everything they said there, fact checks. It's true.
Yes, it is. But yet, we can't add that to a list of articles of impeachment against these rat suckers. Come on. I mean, you know, we have to sit here and just take it. You know, and all our only recourse at this point is a vote every so often. This isn't right. I say throw the book at them. I say list every goddamn fucking grievance. put it out there on the table, even if they don't have to agree to all, you know, they could impeach on just the main one, like you said, you know, lying under oath, which again, I think they can squirm out of that too. But it's like some serious shots need to be, you know, put across the bow, so to speak. What they have done, what they are doing, is outrageous. That what you just played just itemized all of that, right from 20, you know, from whatever 2000 there, and selecting Bush.
It's, I mean, when you consider this, when you consider this independent state legislature theory, which again is a bunch of cockamamie crap and has no basis in law or history, which means that they will, you know, those six will probably embrace it fully. It is not inspiring. It's terrifying. Something needs to happen in the near term, but the problem is nothing's going to happen in the near term, Darlene.
Well, what do you mean by near term? Like in the next couple of months, or you mean like after the election? What are you talking about?
Well, we could start by defining it as in this Congress.
Okay. Well, you know, look, I'm just toying with an idea. It's getting shot down because it hasn't been. It's not like it's, you know, I come up with these ideas and they get shot down. But Nadler there is not going to. He's going to, if they do something, if they do file something, it is going to be tight. It's going to be something that is clearly, you know, fairly watertight, right? If they do it at all. And if they don't, then I have to wonder if they're seeing something that isn't watertight. But I would love to see everything in the kitchen sink thrown in. I'd love those articles of impeachment to just go on and on and on. All they need is to hit on one. But I feel as though we're at a crossroads and that we are not seeing a very serious undertaking, even by Biden. What was the point of the commission? You know, what was the point of the commission to look at ways to reform the Supreme Court? What was the point of it? Has anything been implemented? What was the point? You know, I mean, really, what was the point? And I haven't had a chance to read it, but I caught a headline where somebody from that commission had said, "We told you you should expand the Supreme Court, Joe Biden. Now look," you know. Now I haven't had a chance to read the full article yet, but somebody from that commission spoke out and said he's made a tactical error in not expanding the Supreme Court. That was somebody sitting on this commission. They shot that down from the get-go, which to me is not a viable commission because they are not considering all options. They should have considered everything and not ruled that out from the get-go, but they did.
Hold on a minute. How was Biden supposed to pack the court?
Well, he's not. Well, I don't know. He can't necessarily do it on his own, but he could be talking about it. He could be speaking about it. He could be using the bully pulpit quietly. You know, have a couple of conversations with Nancy.
I'm fully in favor.
It's a popular idea, don't you think?
I'm fully in favor of expanding the Supreme Court because that's within the purview of the Congress. The number of justices is not set in the Constitution.
Right.
So the Congress could pass a bill and the president could sign it. The Congress could pass the bill and the president could sign it into law saying that the number of Supreme Court justices shall be 15. And it's unassailable. But the problem is by virtue of the ruling when FDR trying to save his program to get us out of the Depression He tried to unilaterally act and pack the court, and was sued for it, and the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. That is the province of the Congress.
Right, and so, like you said, at one other time we spoke, he did it wrong. Okay, well then, what the fuck was the commission all about then? It was an executive commission. Why did he do it? Was it just because it was just going through the motions, because it was a campaign promise he made, but it was just acting on it, even though he knew it wasn't going to go anywhere? Sounds to me like it was, which is just disgusting. Okay, because then it should have come from Nancy Pelosi. They should have set something up, right? What was the point of it then, Robin? Was there any point to it? Doesn't sound to me as though there were. There was. There was no point to it.
Well, you
right?
know, if you want to make sure nothing...
There has to have been a point.
If you want to make sure nothing gets done, the best thing to do is to take people who won't get anything done and tell them to form a committee over it.
Which is exactly what happened. Okay, so that's on Biden. And I'm not here to, you know, look, I feel bad for the guy. Like, one of my friends was like, oh, my God, at one point do people realize this is elder abuse? And the way he's treated in the press, the way, I don't think he's that awful a president. Am I unhappy with the life? Yeah. But he's done a lot of really good things, too. It's like, is he that awful a president? Where they're like, you know, even Jerry Bignad wouldn't come out and say, well...
I don't think he's awful.
You know, debate.
I don't think he's awful at all.
But, right. But, there are some issues here, obviously. Like with this commission, what was the point behind it? Where's the fourth estate to bring this issue up and say, well, you know, what was the commission all about? Well, you know, what, you know, maybe they advised the House. I don't know. What came of it? What came of it? Nothing. He was going to do that. Wasn't he going to do that in the first 100 days or something? I thought he said he was going to do that right away. I think it actually happened after the first 100 days. I can't recall, but I know it was late in his first term or later. We're in a crisis. What, a constitutional crisis? We've been in a... Yeah. Oh, by the way, you missed something big time when you were given the list of grievances against Bush. As in W?
Yeah.
And all the horrible things he had done. Yeah, you forgot how he, just before he left, how he trashed the economy and all of him and all of his cronies, ransacked and looted the Treasury. Okay? With the whole thing that led to the 2008 Great Recession. That was on his watch. Which, you know, Republicans are never called out. Just like, you know, COVID was, you know, that was on Republicans watch as well. Okay? And remember how they had to rush candidate Obama and candidate McCain, you know, there to sit in the big meetings. But what were they going to do, because all, you know, all the too big to fails were all failing. And apparently McCain was storming in and acting all tough and basically looked like an idiot. I don't know about you, but I know I was sitting there saying, no bailouts, talk to the bailouts, don't do it. It's just, you're just raiding the Treasury and giving it to the bigwigs. They didn't listen to us. That's exactly what they did. So that was the other, you know,
right.
The final grievance, the final last hurrah from Bush, but I digress. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, no.
I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Yeah, no, you're so quiet.
I don't, you know.
Well, no, I'm a little different these days. I find it easier to listen, and I want to.
No.
And I want you to flesh out your ideas. You know, like what you said about W and them raiding the Treasury. The problem was with all those godforsaken tax cuts. Were supposed to only, the chickens weren't supposed to come home to roost until W was long gone so that they could blame the next president, who they knew was going to be a Democrat. But the chickens got home early.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, he had to own it. I've got a story here in front of
me.
Well,
he was in that meeting too, and was all in agreement. He was all, don't forget, like Clinton, Obama was a very good conservative president. He was right there. He chimed right in with the rest of them and said he needed to do the bailout, my recollection. He didn't take it to the people saying something different. Just saying. And I like Obama, don't get me wrong. But go ahead.
Well, no, I saw this story. I had it in the stack from yesterday via NBC News. Are you aware that the Senate, it's called the Cain-Collins bill, and it was introduced jointly by Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Tim Kaine, and Curtsy and Kyrsten Sinema, and it ostensibly enshrines abortion protections. This is, you know, the Senate version, I guess, of what was passed in the House. They've got their own version. But NBC had Elizabeth Warren on, and she said, "Nip, I'm a no vote on this thing. I'm not going to vote yes on it." She,
So something's wrong with it, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And she said,
"Why?"
Well, she said it does not codify Roe. She said the problem here is this bill is not an obvious improvement over where we stand right now. And if Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins are for it, it probably is toxic. And I'm willing, you know, I'm willing to believe Elizabeth Warren, frankly, over Tim Kaine and Curtsy and Kyrsten. I mean, I wouldn't trust Kyrsten Sinema with the carcass of a runover skunk.
Right, and that leaves what the fuck is wrong with Tim Kaine, who could have been, was supposed to be one, you know, a vice president, also long ago.
Well, you got to remember Tim Kaine's...
Right? Wasn't he supposed to be our vice president?
Yeah, he ran with Hillary. But yeah. You got to remember Tim Kaine is kind of cut from the same cloth as Joe Biden. He's a Roman Catholic who doesn't like abortion, mm-hmm. but he doesn't feel like he's got the right to impose his beliefs on everybody else, which I guess is it's better than nothing. But the bottom line is getting any of these religious people to realize that their religion has no business whatsoever, ever in the secular life of this nation is damn near impossible, Darlene.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at, like, their freaking pro forma sessions, what the hell is that all about? You know, outside of just the academics of being sure that they've met a certain number of freaking days a month, which is, like, only 12, okay? The Congress actually meets. What is that all about? You get the chaplain, the House chaplain, the Senate chaplain. You just get up there and, you know, like, will you pray with me? And it's like, okay, and then they say the Pledge of Allegiance. And it's like, oh, give me a fucking break. That shouldn't even be happening in the Congress. Sorry. Go find jobs elsewhere, chaplains. Nothing personal. Nothal.
Well, no, I personally think the idea of a congressional chaplain would make John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin puke.
It's a cognitive dissonance. It's an absolute... Exactly. Puke away. Roll in your grave. Flip around. Flip upside down. Do some results. You know, but what the hell are they trying to pull over people's eyes? And the only good thing that's going to come out of it, you know, for Susan Collins and Murkowski, and that horrid thing from Arizona, is that they can turn around and say, see, we attempted to pass a bill. We attempted to work with the Democrats, and they said no to codifying.
But now Elizabeth Warren had to ruin it.
It's not about the fine print. It's not about the nuance. It's about, you know, what it looks like on, you know, the big sort of quick soundbite that Fox News can run away with.
Well, and see, I guess I'm a radical. I'm a hardcore. I don't think there should be any legislation regarding abortion whatsoever. The government has no business in it, except for the fact that state governments license physicians. That's about the end of it. I don't want to hear any horse shit about fake heartbeats. I don't want to hear any horse shit about how many weeks. If the child,
well, I agree with that.
If a baby can be, I mean,
but you know what, Robin?
The conversation has been so toxified, Darlene, that Republicans have people believing that there are women who will go through 6 months of pregnancy and then say, "Nah, you know, I don't like you," and go in and say, "Dad, get it out of me, Doc." When it's just not true. It is simply not true.
It's not true.
I remember the paroxysms over partial birth abortion. The fuck does that phrase even mean? I mean, it's word salad.
Well, like I said, they make shit up. And it's like, it brings me back to my original argument. You know, I think you need to just... They're not coming from an honest place in any manner, way, shape, or form. And if you listen to those hearings, the abortion hearings of post-Roe America, what is it like, blah, blah, blah. They get up there with the pictures and the Republicans make all of these statements, the fetal heartbeat, blah, 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 blah. And you don't hear a single pushback from any of the Democrats on the science.
Right. That used to drive me crazy because, you know, these goddamn Republicans would...
It should still be driving.
And you could tell how perversely excited they got when they would start talking about it, because they'd say, you know, in a partial birth abortion, they induce labor and the poor little baby's head comes out of the birth canal and then the doctor starts a chopping at it with the scissors. I mean, I remember this garbage. It was a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when you do a late term abortion because the life of the mother will end if she tries to give birth to the child. And it is a horrifying thing for mother, for child, for the entire family. And it's a decision that I would not even wish on a goddamn Republican. Because the trauma that it carries with it is a lifetime.
Yeah.
But it's like,
well, yeah.
it's like
mean,
that. It's like
a
that.
Woman could have, yeah.
It's like that ad yeah. from Mothers Against Greg Abbott, MAGA, down in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
You know where the doctor explains to the parents the horrible, horrible thing that is going to happen to this baby that is at present in utero, who will only live hours in absolute misery and hell. And, well, okay, Doc, what are our choices? Oh, you don't have any. Well, who makes that decision? Greg makes it. Who the fuck is Greg?
And he does the clapper thing. And the phone is right there, the red line. And it's true. And they're like, hey.
And the sickest, most cynical
bad.
Part of this is that if any of the women that had anything to do with Ken Paxton or Dan Patrick or Greg Aspott or Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw, if any of them were inconveniently pregnant, they would quietly go and get it taken care of. And you know it, and I know it. This has never been a moral issue. This has never been an ethical issue. This is how you gin up the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers, and get them out to the polls. That's it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, we've said that a million times, but it remains a million times true, Darlene.
I mean, truly, the only way around it is like what Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said before she died. You know, you got to have it as a privacy. It's a privacy issue. All of this is resolved if everybody just minds their own fucking business.
It's all his fault. But the Supreme Court has left civil unrest and chaos. They have further complicated an already complex system and country. I mean, just the things that, you know, being a citizen of this nation that requires of us, all the bullshit with taxes and this at the state level, the local level, you know, everything that we have to contend with, and then to be sniffing, you know, snuffing out our rights, and we have to just kind of stand by and say, oh, well, if we call it out, we're being political, or that we're fucking abiding to the 1805 whatever impeachment. I'm sorry, Robin, I don't think you're radical enough. You know, I just, this is serious. This is so freaking serious. This could completely alter.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes, but I'd like to explore this idea of me not being radical enough. I mean, I have private thoughts that I cannot say on this program, or even out loud. That would suit me down to the ground. But more than anything, if the idea of impeaching these bastards and you know that's a sexually neutral term, or gender neutral. if there's any hope of impeaching these bastards, you know, the important thing is that you make sure that when you shoot, you hit. And I don't think critiquing a bad decision is going to yield an impeachment. You know, I don't think it's going to yield a majority vote in the House. And any of it is going to die in the Senate as it now stands. And so what I think we need is,
so then you really can't go after AOC for not, and the others in the squad for not bringing articles of impeachment, because maybe they're saying it ain't going to go anywhere in the Senate. We need to see what happens after.
Right.
The
I mean, that's probably the rational response. What I object to is getting people's hopes up and saying we need to talk about it. If that's all it's going to be is talk, I mean, you know, if I was in the House of Representatives, which is a stupid thing for me to say in the first place, but you know, if you believe in something, fuck it, do it. But the counter argument to that is everything's political, and the most important thing right now is maintaining the majority in the fall of this year. Everything
well,
else,
which has been made incredibly difficult, if not next to impossible, because what's scary is the legislatures that are giving them the. Well, you played it in the Australian commercial, that or public service, whatever it was. If they don't like the choice for president, they'll just throw out all of those electors and put it for what they want. This is serious shit. And again, this was part and parcel of what the Supreme Court did. Doesn't it all come back to them, quite frankly?
Well, it does, and what you're getting toward is the fact that we need significant reform of the Supreme Court. In that juice media spot, they talked about imposing term limits on the Supreme Court. The problem and fine idea, I guess, but the problem is you have to amend the Constitution to do that. Now, building the consensus for that, you might build consensus for that, Darlene, because you might get a bunch of Republicans who go, yeah, I want a term limit the shit out of Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson. I can get on board with that. You know, let's do this as long as they're first. But even, you know, but there's no way around the structure of the Supreme Court as it's established by Article 3. And it's frustrating as hell. And it seems like the, you know, we know impeachment's not going to fly. then why are, you know, and we always find ourselves engaging in defensive politics, Darlene, and it drives me bananas. Because what we wind up doing is we say things like, "Oh, we can't do that because we're scared," and the Republicans are better at it. I mean, it's like what they did with the Handmaid. Don't you dare say anything about her weird-ass cult religion. Don't talk about her being a handmaid. You better not do that. You'll be persecuting her for her religion. And the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee replied, "Yes, Mother."
Right. That brings me back to my original point.
And so that's with the possibility of considering the size of the Supreme Court, the Republicans got out there on the front end and said, "Joe Biden wants to pack the court. Joe Biden wants." Fuck, the court's already been packed. Gorsuch?
Yes. They project everything that they have done. Yeah. They project everything they've done or are about to do.
You know, they're playing chess and we're playing checkers.
And we continue to play checkers. And here we go. Losing our rights. Left and right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I mentioned.
Y'all
last
next. It's all.
And it's like I mentioned last week. It's the damnedest thing that like in Olympic level sports, they passed all these rules about testosterone content. Well, there aren't that many trans women mm-hmm. competing in the Olympics, but that sure is a handy ass rule if you want to keep some. Some incredibly talented black women out of competition, and that's exactly what it's been used for. Oh, she may be a cis female, but her testosterone levels are too high. She can't run in the race.
She's too muscular. She has to be taking steroids.
No, there's no allegation that she's taking steroids.
You know?
She passes all her blood tests.
No, I'm just saying generally. No, I'm saying generally. They've been saying stuff like that for years against black, like Serena Williams, because Serena Williams is a powerhouse. She's a powerful woman. She's muscular. She must be taking steroids. She's basically a guy. Now, Martina Navratilova was just, I wouldn't say she was just as muscular, but she was beating all the athletes left and right. I mean, Chris Everett couldn't handle her, everything like that. But because she was white.
Yeah.
You know.
But the passage of these testosterone.
She kind of got away with it.
The passage of these testosterone level rules was in direct response to trans women. So it really hasn't been around for years and years and years. This is new. And lo and behold, people said, you know, this is bullshit, because a trans woman on hormone therapy for more than a year or so has a lower testosterone level than a cis female does. But the rule, like I said, comes in real handy if you want to keep a Kenyan woman who's a long distance runner, a marathoner, from doing what they seem to do so often, because they come from a running culture, and that is win. Because a couple of years ago, when they confronted a woman from an African country over her testosterone levels, they said, "You're going to have to take drugs to lower your testosterone," probably meaning spironolactone. And she said, "Oh, hell no." And so she was banned from competition. And now there are two more women who have been knocked out of competition. Cis women. Black cis women. And no one seems to be bothered by it. You know, because we gotta keep the trannies. We gotta keep women's sports safe from the trannies. I hate that word. By the way, a little bit ago during our conversation, Darlene, Matt in San Francisco wrote in and said, subject line, "People voting on rights." I'm not sure why, but it seems strange to me that people are voting on whether other people have certain rights. I say legalize women and all other humans and move on to other stuff. We could use some desalinization plants here in California. The seas are rising and the rain don't fall on land anymore. Seems like water's kind of important to sustain life. What Barbara or Mary talk to their doctor about and what procedures they have is none of my concern. God, Matt, from your mouth to the flying spaghetti monster's ears.
It doesn't impact you. None of your business.
But the problem is the religious maniacs, whether they're Roman Catholics or Southern Baptists or Church of Christ or whatever, the very structure, since this is Wednesday, the very structure of their of their religion tells them that even if it's none of their business, it's still their business. That it is their job to force their views on all the heathens and infidels. You know, we throw fits over Muslims and say, you know, they want to make everybody be a Muslim and pray toward Mecca. Well, hell, that's, you know, every Christian will cite the Great Commission. Go ye unto all the world and preach the gospel and convert people. And, you know, we've got 1,700 years of history that show that that people are willing to do that at the point of a sword or a muzzle of a gun. Or, it's a damn conundrum. Darlene, I do have to go, but it has been a lovely conversation. I'm so glad you called.
Well, thank you. I'm glad, too. I don't know if it got anywhere. Or if I made any remarkable ideas. Doesn't sound like I did, but hey, I'm frustrated, and I just want to see everything thrown at these assholes because, you know, I just, for people to get it across to the Supreme Court that they are no longer a legitimate or viewed as a legitimate co-equal branch of government, I think that certainly will at least stick in the craw of C.J. Roberts at minimum. But I want to see Alito brought into this because he's a louse, just a plain old louse, and with a fuck the beard and everything. You know, it's like, ugh, what the hell? He's got more hair on his face than on his head. An asshole. I can't stand him. And he's smug, and he's arrogant, and he is just somebody who's been sitting in an ivory tower far too long.
And he's also vicious. He is the single biggest misogynist on the court, and that says something.
Yeah, it says a lot because there's quite a few of them, I would say. But you know, again, you've got men making the decisions for women, and there was a great thing on BuzzFeed today about how men don't understand how women's bodies work. And it was a whole list of tweets and things where women were just like, oh, you know, like one woman started the whole thing off by saying that her boyfriend thought that her eggs had shells on them.
Jesus.
You know, the old man. The old mother actually really thought that. And then it just started a whole string of reply tweets. Yeah, my boyfriend thinks that my period lasts one day, then I just sit on a toilet, and that I've been lying all along saying my period lasts 5 to 7 days because I'm trying to avoid having sex with him.
Oh, God.
And it just went on and on and on. But the moral being, men should not be making these fucking decisions for women. Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's not hard.
You know.
Yeah. Remember the anti-abortion movement was started not by women, but by men, who then in turn had women come along and serve as enablers. It's disgusting.
Yeah, guilt-ridden. You know, whatever.
I saw where some incel was over in England was arguing that the cost of tampons and the period tax,
which is disgusting.
Yeah.
That's a disgrace. I think about all the money I lost over the years.
Yeah, and ran through the numbers saying, ran through the numbers saying, oh, you don't, shut up. You know, you don't need that. You know, one good box of tampons will last you a year. You fucking idiot. God damn.
Yeah.
Toxic shock syndrome, anybody?
But it's good that women, it's good that women speaking out more and just calling this bullshit out. And just saying, you know, you're idiots. You can't be making these decisions for us. And the one, you know, woman, self-hating woman that did, she needs to go home. Fucking needs to go home. All right. You have a good evening.
All right. You too, darling. Take care, dear. See you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And so we come to the end of the program, even though both streams crashed somewhere along the way. I apologize for that. But it'll all be on the podcast. Thanks, everybody. Oh, God. We avoided a goose egg. Thank you to Karen and Charlene and Emilio for that. $242 remain on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. We were at $600 today. We'll be at $900 tomorrow, so we're doing it again. But thank you to, and we lost a subscriber today. Sorry about that, Stacy. I don't know what happened. I don't mean, you know, they're not lost. It's just people drop away for some reason or another. Thank you to each and every one of you, our Podbean and Patreon, or PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Podbean's on my mind because they suck. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatsoever manner you choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. So much, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is Head on .live. I will be subbing for Malloy this Friday. Looking forward to that. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now a proud union shop. Get your second booster. Stay safe. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And, of course, if some guy goes running towards you, hollering about, I'm voting against Finland and Sweden, avoid that chicken shit like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.